millennials, we seem to have that, like, for lack of a better word, soft spot. Like, we go hard for things that we believe in and things that definitely touch the heart and things like that. So knowing that about myself and the generation, I felt like this was the perfect generation to target because we needed to know, as well as I felt like they would help push the advocacy as well.
Welcome to Expressive Espresso.
Today is about the power of you.
Anytime I'm scared of something, I feel impelled to attack it.
Expressive Espresso is the coffee shop for leaders like you.
If you don't fail, you're not even trying.
Expand your knowledge about personal development.
Anything that starts with "I don't want to work" is already a problem.
Entrepreneurship.
Invest in things that you understand.
And leadership.
You will change the world.
This is Expressive Espresso with Alexis DeAngicoli.
Thank you all for joining this episode of Expressive Espresso, the podcast. I'm your host, Alexis DeAngicoli, and I am so excited. I know I use that word a lot, but this is a hard subject to talk about. And typically with a podcast, I usually don't go this route, but it's something that we have to talk about because it's something that a lot of people have dealt with. I know myself personally, I dealt with it last year with my step-grandfather, and the young lady that I have on with us today has dealt with it as well, so much so that she is an advocate. What am I talking about today? I'm talking about Alzheimer's. It's important that we have advocates like Brianna and like other people because we need to talk about this. So I'm here today to talk with Brianna Sales of Nora 22. How are you doing today? And thank you so much again for joining us.
I'm well, and thank you for having me. Excited to have this conversation.
I want to start off slow, right, before we get into it, but okay. So what made you become an advocate for Alzheimer's?
As you stated earlier, I dealt with it personally with my grandmother and other family members, but it was really close when it was with my grandmother. And like you said, it does last for a while. I would say, we found out about her diagnosis while I was in high school. So that was like 2007. And she passed away 2014. That was a pretty tough time. And, you know, in that time of finding out, it's always been my mother, my grandmother, and myself. So I was kind of selfish finding out the diagnosis. Like, I wanted my grandmother back. I don't think anybody enjoys going to like nursing homes, but I didn't like going. I would try my best to, you know, put on the best face, but I didn't like going. Like, I didn't like seeing her like that. And after she passed away, I just kind of felt like there was more I could have done or should have done, and also kind of beating myself up for being so selfish in that time frame. But then I realized it wasn't a lot of resources and people talking about it then. So as a 16-year-old and then graduating high school, going to college and things like that, it wasn't something that I knew to look for. I just knew with old age comes sometimes Alzheimer's, but it's really so much more to that. And that's not really the case, that it only comes when you're older, or that it's something that just comes with old age. So I figured there were more people out there like me that needed the resources, that probably needed to talk about it and have anyone to talk to, or just kind of wanting to learn more. And when I say that, I'm targeting my generation, the millennials, because millennials, we seem to have that, like, for lack of a better word, soft spot. Like, we go hard for things that we believe in and things that definitely touch the heart and things like that. So knowing that about myself and the generation, I felt like this was the perfect generation to target because we needed to know, as well as I felt like they would help push the advocacy as well.
That's a great answer. And with that, I guess a late millennial, but that's fine. I'm still with you. But, you know, there's a misconception And it's great that you came to that understanding that, oh, well, with old age, this is something that kind of happens. I'm sure there are preventable measures that one can take maybe or possibly, but it is hard even on the caretaker. And I'm sure it was hard with, you know, you and your mother to see your grandmother that way, especially from what I've gathered. And if you can help explain that a little bit better, but mm-hmm. from what I gathered is that during that time with Alzheimer's, they revert backwards. Don't remember the grandchildren. They may remember their children, but they're little. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Yeah, the memory does revert backwards to like the earlier ages. For me personally, that was something I never asked my grandmother. Like, hey, do you remember me? I don't think I would have been able to stomach the fact that if she answered no, or just kind of looked at, but I took it as like going to see her and being around her. Her smile was still the same. Her mannerisms were still the same early on. And when we would come in, it seemed like she would acknowledge us as if she did know who we were. So that was enough for me and my mother and most of my intermediate family that would go visit and be with her. We never asked that question. And I know people do, and I'm not faulting people that do. It's definitely not a question to try to like beat over the head with them of like, do you remember me? Because I actually did like a reel on social media about that. Like, just imagine yourself in their shoes. Like, you don't want nobody asking you the same question over and over and over again. So we shouldn't do it to them. Yeah, it's definitely a memory loss thing, but it also goes way beyond that. Eventually, they're no longer able to do for themselves. It takes a toll on like a full body. It's not just the memory. You may start to notice it in the memory, but it definitely starts to affect the rest of the person that's dealing with the disease.
When did you start, or your mother start to notice it with your grandmother, and then when did you guys realize it was time to make that decision that you need more help?
Basically, it was a funny story of like the idea behind the brand is be fashionably aware. And that's because my grandmother was a really sharp dresser. Everybody knew her based off her style and things like that. So she would never leave anything out of place. And one day we were supposed to be going somewhere and my mother and I were waiting in the car. And she came downstairs from her apartment in a slip. And we was like, ma'am, where you think you're going? where your clothes at? So we had noticed little things before then, but that was like the final, like, all right, something might be wrong. And as far as making the decision of when to put her in assisted living, finding out her diagnosis was probably around my senior year of high school. My mother got married the year before and she was moving to Ohio. So it left my uncle to be the one to care for her. And I knew personally that she would want me to continue going on. So I went to school. So the assisted living, my uncle would be there in the city with her and we would come visit monthly.
So how hard was that decision for, you know, you, your mother and your uncle?
Well, being a teenager, I really had no say. So I just kind of had to go with the flow. I feel like us talking about my cousins and I, who are like in a closer age range, we wish that we could have been there so that we would have been able to like keep her in like a home setting versus the assisted living facility, because not to shame facilities and those that work there, but not all of them are all great. So it wasn't the best experience. And that was one of the reasons why I didn't like going there. We tried to make it as homey as possible. Like, we kept up like this big poster board with like pictures of her like family and friends. We would bring in things. Like, one thing she would always love to do, I noticed like one day I wore a bracelet and she would always just kind of play with it. So it kept me to wear like a little, some type of bracelet with something on it each time I would go, so that, you know, she would have that. They sometimes try to steal it, but you know. But yeah, that, I would imagine that was a difficult decision, because I know my mom would have wanted to be there more frequently. versus us, you know, going monthly, like we were there every single month, sometimes twice a month. I think that dynamic would have been a little bit better if we would have been able to keep her in a home setting. I am a proponent of, if there is a need, assisted living facilities are a good option, just because you want to do what's best for the loved one. You don't want to be like leaving them alone and not there to do for them. And you still have things. For instance, millennials, we're just now kind of getting our footing in life. People have children, stepping into your careers. And on top of that, potentially having to take care of a loved one can be a lot to juggle. So, I mean, assess the situation and figure out what works best for you and the loved one.
After this experience with your grandmother and becoming an advocate with Nora 22, what have you found are the stats with Black and brown people and with the Alzheimer's disease?
I mean, just to get straight to the point, we are the population that either, how do I word this? Definitely it shows up more in our community as African Americans. And that comes from like a number of things, but just one, we would just say the accessibility to healthcare and things like that. And also with our community, we don't like to talk about things sometimes. And people are still under the same impression that I was, that, oh, they're just getting older, so it is what it is. Instead of being proactive and going to seek out if there's any other like forms of testing or things that they can do to find out if they are showing signs of early Alzheimer's or things like that. Paying attention or educating yourself, like if you do start seeing signs that you may think may be it, start researching and see what the early signs are. So of course you have memory loss, but like not being able to, like different signs with like perception of things and like losing things more frequently. Like for instance, that was another sign with my grandmother, like another funny story, like my uncle would tell her to put her keys in like a specific spot in the kitchen. But one time she didn't put them in the specific spot, but they were in the kitchen. And where they were was in the refrigerator. And he was really upset about it. But it was like, well, she did what you told her to do. So just like certain things like that, like I still have her jewelry box. So she would like put little things in there. I don't find much jewelry anymore. I'm finding like pieces of a comb or a wallet and little things like that. So just noticing the changes in behavior could also be things to pay attention to.
I want to get deeper into that. Okay. So like you were saying, a memory loss. And of course, you know, even we have that, even, you know, kids have that. Yeah. How deep does that go?
It could be as things like forgetting familiar places, like the names or the directions to that place. So like, say, for instance, you always drive from home to work, no problem. Then all of a sudden you're finding yourself or your loved ones finding themselves lost going to a location that they would be able to probably drive to with their eyes closed. Or thinking of the right words to say sometime, not being able to put that together, or a context clue sometime of being able to put A and B together, or two and two to make four, not literally, but just in that sense, finding it hard to make decisions, hard to pick up a new skill, like learning something new could be a sign of that. So yes, it is kind of hard to determine. Because like you said, everybody forgets things, but it's like when it starts to happen more frequently or things that just normally you would know, and it's hard to kind of grasp or remember what exactly it is. Even going into that, and we're talking about like Alzheimer's isn't, you know, just something that comes with old age. That's one thing I was big on when I found out about, like, you can get early onset as early as 30. I don't say that to people to like scare anyone, because it just kind of like shocked me. And to find out, like they say that, like it can start forming like 20 years before you even find out the diagnosis. So it's just certain things like that. Like, we need to know those things, because you may be walking around and like, oh, they're just, it's just memory loss. And then you miss, because Alzheimer's has multiple stages. So you've kind of bypassed the early stages, and now you're hit hard with the latter stages because you weren't able to understand what may have been going on earlier. So that's another reason why being an advocate is such a passion of mine, because us as young people need to know these things too, because it doesn't only affect when you get older. Granted, yes, there are more people that are older that have the disease, but there are some that are early on.
Wow. I did not know that, that it can start as early as 30. Wow. That is really interesting. And not, I mean, of course, at first I was like, oh my gosh, it's scary. Of course, you didn't get that first. But that just goes into the next question. What can we do to prevent it?
The bad news comes of there's nothing you can do to prevent it. There's things you can do to slow down the progression. So there is no cure as of yet. But that's why I do what I do, to hopefully see a world without Alzheimer's one day, or at least help assist for other people to see a world without Alzheimer's one day. But things that could help are like incorporating certain things into your diet. They say exercising or doing some form of activity at least 30 minutes a day can help with that. Keeping up with like cognitive activity. So doing like puzzles and things that will kind of keep you sharp and keep your mind working. So there are things out there that you can do to, like I said, slow down the progression, but unfortunately, there is nothing that we can do to prevent it. And a lot of people are under the understanding, and I used to be one, that it's hereditary. It's not always the case. Like, it can happen to your mom, your grandma, and skip you. So it's just kind of like trying to address it as early as you can. And I do believe, I need to look a little deeper into that, but I think there's some tests that you can do to find out if there's like a gene or something that you have that's more prominent to getting Alzheimer's. But what I've found out and learned in my research as well is they can't really find out if you had Alzheimer's for sure until after the person has passed away.
What kind of foods, I know you said incorporating some foods into your diet, what kind of foods would you say specifically?
Things that I incorporated more so frequently is like, I love iced matcha lattes from Starbucks. That's my thing. So matcha is good. Ginger. Let's see, different nuts, dark chocolate. There's like different supplements out there that are specifically geared to helping with cognitive functions. One that I've been taking and also have my mother taking is Relevate by NeuroReserve.
Okay.
Found out about them on Instagram, and I've been taking theirs. I would say, have I noticed much of a change? I think I honestly just started taking it to, like I said, start working on measures of slowing down the progression, because it is something that has been in my family. So, like I said, it's not hereditary all the time, but just with that in mind, I'm trying to do things to help myself as well. But I do have a lot of this information on my Instagram page.
We'll definitely have to go to your Instagram page now, because yeah, we need to know. We need to know about this, man.
Yeah, it's like I said, I can't even say a scary topic. It can be for some, and it's a heavy topic. I'll just say that, not hard, but a heavy topic. A lot of people don't want to talk about it or don't want to think about the possibilities of, it's kind of like if you have a parent that's trying to prepare you to say, okay, here's all my information. So in case of, you know, if I pass away, here's this. I don't want to have that conversation right now. I don't even want to consider or think about you not being here, but it's an important conversation to have. Look on my Instagram. So I do know a bit more of things that you can eat or incorporate. It's like turmeric is good, as well as sea moss. And we've been hearing about sea moss a lot lately, especially since COVID, but it does have some really good properties to help overall health.
So turmeric, the spice or in a pill form?
Either way. So what I've actually been doing so that it's easier for me is I incorporate it while I'm cooking. So like certain things like ginger, turmeric, I know salmon. So like I cook a lot of fish, use these different spices to just kind of get them in more frequently. Like one thing I love to have when I can either, or when I want to make it at home or just buy it, is like the acai smoothie bowls. Acai is really good as well.
So what advice would you give to those who are the caretaker of somebody with Alzheimer's, especially with caretaker burnout?
Okay, I'll answer that in two parts. I would say just overall advice of being a caregiver would be open to change, because what worked a month ago may not work the next month with the loved one. So how you're communicating with them, how you're getting them to eat or, you know, bathe, things like that, different activities, it just may not be the same. So be open and be willing for like kind of trial and error. Some things may work and some things may not. I'm not going to say it's going to be easy, but I think keeping that in mind makes it a little less stressful, or it could make it a little less stressful. As far as burnout, of course, everybody's an advocate of self-care, but not have like real life examples of what that looks like. But if you have the opportunity or have loved ones or family members or friends that can help you, I would say take that time for yourself. Allow someone else, like maybe have someone come in once a week or once every couple of weeks and kind of relieve you of your responsibilities and just go do something for yourself that you like to do. You know, whether it's read a book, you might just want to sleep, or you just may not want to do anything, and all of that is fine. And let's see what else about burnout. Try to get into some type of community or, you know, groups that you're able to share those experiences with, maybe people that are going through similar things, so you don't feel like you're alone. Like if you don't have those family members that can help you and it's just you, definitely find your community, find your tribe that can help you and keep you kind of grounded. And so you just don't feel like you're trying to do it alone. That's one thing I've learned a lot by being on social media, trying to spread awareness, is even though I'm not a caregiver at this point in time, I've gained community with caregivers. And I'm able to watch them as they're caring for their loved ones, seeing what, you know, worked, what doesn't work in their situation. That's another piece of advice. It's no one size fit all solution. Like what may work for another family member or someone else you may know that's taking care of someone with Alzheimer's may not work with your loved one or the person you're taking care of. So yeah, definitely find community. I think that helps. And I see that a lot. Like the caregivers I follow, they really mention that. Like I've seen them meet up sometimes if they live in the same city or just stuff like that. I think that's a big component of making it through that journey.
You know, I think that's a great idea. I didn't even know that a community like that existed, but I shouldn't be surprised. But I'm just thinking about some of the people who, you know, aren't on social media and things like that, or may be apprehensive of saying to another loved one, hey, I need a break, you know, like, would you have any advice for them, for those who may not speak up or don't have social media?
That's a really good question as far as I having social media and even not speaking up, because I do have like a smaller group to have a safe space to have those conversations, and some people still don't have the conversation. So I've been trying to figure that out myself on how could I get through to them to be able to open up and have that conversation. But as far as without social media, there are some resources out there. Well, one, I can make name of an application that seems to be helping people with keeping things in line to help with reducing burnout. His name is Mike the caregiver guy, he has an app that's called Care Trainer that helps you like keep documentation, be able to like just assist with like documents and things like that to keep it in place. So like if you're going to the doctor, that's less stress when you're taking your loved ones to the doctor. Yeah, outside of social media, that's a good question. There are resources. There are like websites. Alzheimer's Association has some resources out there for like hotlines to call. Yeah, reading different books. There's some articles out there if people like, if that's the type of learner or the way they receive information, that's out there as well. Things like that. But I'm really just on searches and I start going down loopholes of information, just continuously reading. Most of the time I pick like a topic a month and then I research that and just kind of go through that way. But yeah, I would imagine that books will become another source of my research sooner rather than later. Help out with that. The whole faith without work is dead. So that's how I believe and see my work as an advocate. I can't have faith that, you know, Alzheimer's will be no longer if I'm not putting in the work. Be fashionably aware, as I was mentioning earlier. All of our family is pretty much kind of like that. We all like to get dressed, like we just like to put on. So it's a family thing. And the more I've been pushing the brand and things like that, I've learned. I actually spoke with my mom today and told her, I was like, yeah, this is a family brand. Like, I hope that my younger cousins, I don't have children of my own just yet, but if I do, they all would be able to look at this and maybe one day take over it, you know, and just keep pushing it forward to keep her legacy going. And then eventually mine, because I don't want Nora to just be a quote unquote fashion brand, because it's evolved from that from the beginning. Like at first it was just t-shirts trying to get the message out. I didn't really care about getting paid for it. Just wanted to start getting the message out. Now that I've been out and like I said, forming and being a part of community, I've learned that people come to me or look at me as a resource as well. So that's been cool. And eventually because of how I wasn't necessarily a big fan of my grandmother being in an assisted living facility, I want to come up with a branch of Nora to be an assisted living facility, hiring like millennial caregivers and things like that. And I know before people try to crucify me, yes, I would like to have people that aren't millennials, but that will be like my target just to keep that same mission going. And learning the things that people don't like about assisted living facilities and also being able to employ people so that this can continue to go forward. So yes, there will always be like statement t-shirts and things that'll go along with the brand, but I have such a bigger vision for Nora in the long run.
In honor of International Women's Month, March, I want to say a special thanks to Brianna. The Nora 22 brand is really a great brand for Alzheimer's. I know I usually don't discuss topics like this, but it affects us all. It affects the caregiver. It affects the children. It affects the grandchildren. And it also affects the person who was struggling with this disease. I hope that you all enjoyed the content, and Expressive Espresso usually comes out bi-weekly, but I want to extend that and I want to actually make it my intention to come out weekly. With that, I want to also extend International Women's Month because I have had the opportunity to interview a few special ladies, especially for next week's interview with Jasmine Benton. She is the owner and founder of A Splash of Jazz, and it's not your typical interview on Expressive Espresso. It shows how going through really challenging times can raise your resilience and your motivation and to help you, of course, motivate others. I think that the audience, you all, will enjoy this story as much as I enjoyed interviewing her. So thank you again for tuning into this latest episode, and I hope you have a great week.